This is the Uplink Marketing Podcast, and today we are joined by the founders of Maniac Agency, Joe and Tim. Before we get to that interview, I wanted to remind you that we have a free marketing assessment available on our website, uplinkmarketing.com/free. You don't even have to enter your email address to get it. You just click download and you've got a PDF assessment that will help you determine what your biggest marketing weaknesses and strengths are. When your marketing system is healthy and working together with the other parts of your business, it fuels profitable, sustainable growth. A healthy marketing system adds value to the business by effectively communicating to the right people at the right time. How do you know if this is happening or not? Growth. Good marketing shows up on the bottom line. That's why at Uplink Marketing, we keep our clients' bottom line top of mind. And now I'll introduce you to Joe and Tim. Joe and Tim met in college, where they became serial collaborators and learned how to successfully promote ideas using solid tech and design. That was 10 years ago. Having spent much of the meantime in corporate environments, they now operate Maniac, an un-agency that makes marketing your business way less complicated. Their goal? To deliver exceptional experiences for their clients and accountable marketing based on strategic design and teachable tech. No more headaches. Let's dive right in. Tim and Joe, welcome to the Uplink Marketing Podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
In case you were wondering which one is Tim and which one is Joe, if you're watching this, Tim held up his water that had his name on it, and Joe is the one in the beautifully, is that a floral, like Hawaiian?
It's a floral print, yes.
Yes, a beautiful floral print button down.
We spent about 10 minutes trying to figure out what you're
So watch the video.
Yes, good choice. Cool. Guys, thank you for being on the podcast. I'm excited, one, to hear your story today. I've heard a little bit about it. We've gone to lunch together and have talked a few times leading up to this. But first, just start by telling us who you are. Who's Tim? Who's Joe? What do you guys do? What are your roles at Maniac? And maybe even back up from there after you introduce yourselves and tell us how you met. What's the origin story of you two? Is that the right way to ask that? What is your origin story?
Yeah, I feel like we need a sound effect.
What kind? Maybe we can add one in.
I don't know, like
lightning.
Okay, deal, done.
You go first.
All right, so my name is Tim Sabini. I was born overseas. I'm American, not by birth, but by my parents. So lived in Tiberias, Israel for a couple years, then moved to Edinburgh, Scotland for a long time, and then made our way to Florida. So my dad did a lot of business growing up. So we've got a lot of kind of the entrepreneurial businessman vibe in our family, if you will. And I mean, a little bit about me, like I'm a big coffee lover. I'm an OG crypto trader. I was buying Ethereum at $3. So people are listening will be like, man, I was there when that happened too.
And have you benefited from it? Is that okay to ask?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah,
that's awesome. Way to go, man.
Big believer in the blockchain and where that technology is headed and what it's going to do for the future of a lot of industries.
What year was that? I know I'm getting off topic now, but that you can't drop a insight like that and not expect follow-up questions.
So I was finding Bitcoin and Litecoin and Ripple around 2014, 2015. And so that's really when I started trading.
What was the thing that you realized that made you believe in it, that made you spend your American dollars for this currency that really was nothing at that point? Yeah, you mentioned like $3 for this, but you could buy a cheeseburger for $3. Like you chose to do that over something tangible. What was like the tipping point for you?
I think it was just this idea, honestly, like aside from the cryptocurrency itself, like what fueled the passion was just the blockchain technology itself. And like the white papers that were coming out, the applications that people had who were saying we should be using this for voting, to validate people's votes for healthcare. And it just, when I saw it for the first time, I remember thinking like I was just spending hours just researching. I was actually at work at the time. I probably was slacking off and I was like, what is this? And I just started reading about it. And I was thinking like, oh my gosh, like, this is incredible. And then I love this idea that like the reward for mining was like this coin, this digital currency. So depends on who you talk to. I think a lot of people are going to think like it is a digital currency, or it's like, you know, a store of value kind of thing. For me, like the passion always came behind the idea of the ledger and the blockchain itself. So I think just seeing that, I was like, this is definitely going to change the world in some capacity, this whole decentralized, unhackable blockchain ledger that, it just was incredible. So I was like, I want to get in on this.
That's hilarious. So even as you describe it, I'm waiting for my tipping point. And I'm like, maybe if I find somebody else's tipping point, it'll help me. But the language you're using is truly a different language. You're speaking English to me. But whenever you say blockchain, I'm picturing blocks and I'm picturing chains, like quite literally.
So like Legos, I don't know.
And so there's just some sort of information gap that I'm sure you're going to benefit from, and people whose tipping point was, or the earlier your tipping point was, the more you're going to benefit as someone attempts to figure out how to explain what's going on in English to people that aren't as technically inclined.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting conversation. I think we should just spend the rest of the podcast talking about this personally. But if you talk to anybody in my circle, like I'm a crypto evangelist. I think that was like on my Twitter bio at one point or something. It's funny because all of my friends were in on it pretty early after I told them about it, and then a lot of them told their friends. But
did they pay you a fee? Like
no, for me it was a hobby. Like I was just telling them about it. They were like, "Tell me about Bitcoin." I keep reading about it in the news, and I'm like, "All right, let's hop on a call, and I'm going to tell you why I'm so passionate about it." And they're always like, "Man, you really are passionate about this." I'm like, "It's super cool. It's this incredible piece of technology that's like completely unregulated. No matter how hard they try, like the government tries, it's just like this decentralized system, and it's just super cool."
That is okay. So that was way off topic, but really valuable. And maybe we actually do a crypto podcast for Uplink. I think that's probably the next step, so that this doesn't completely become the crypto episode. But I want to do a crypto episode, and it may be my tipping point. So we'll see.
Awesome.
I don't remember where you were at in your story as I interrupted you there. I just heard Ethereum and $4.
I would say like the last part about me, like what I find that I've kind of people have told me about myself is I'm a people activator. So I've always been passionate about people and their abilities to execute specialized projects. For example, I've got kind of a little side hustle hobby thing going right now with my brother-in-law, Chad Reeves, right now, who is working on a coffee venture with me. We just bought our first commercial roaster. I am a coffee drinker that likes to put cream in my coffee. So I'm not a purist. I also love iced coffee, so don't judge. But he is just like, having known him for a couple of years, I just realized like this guy's got such an incredible palate for coffee. And for me, I was like, I want to be part of that. I want to try to encourage him and get him going on that. And I feel like that is kind of a legacy that I've had in a couple of different stories where I meet people and I'm like, oh my gosh, this person is incredible. The things that they can do. And it's to no benefit to me. I just get this, I don't know, I just get such fulfillment, like trying to encourage them to go and strive for bigger things. So yeah, I'd say coffee drinker, crypto trader, husband to Lauren Sabini, and people activator.
It's just turned into like an Instagram bio.
Yeah.
Love it. Cool. Thank you, Tim, for sharing with us. Joe, who are you? And then one of you jump in and tell me how you guys met after you share your story.
So I grew up outside of Philadelphia. The second of three children, we were all homeschooled, which is like
West Philadelphia?
It was not.
Okay. Yes. If it was, I would expect an intro was like West Philadelphia. Born. Okay. So what part of Philadelphia? I don't even know Philadelphia.
But, if anyone's like remotely familiar with the area, it's near Lansdale. But anyways, it's about 30 minutes from downtown.
Cool.
So second of three, my brother and sister and I were all homeschooled, which is like an interesting little, you know, tidbit about me. So
K through 12th grade.
K through 12. Yeah. First time I like walked into a classroom was college, met this guy. But yeah, so my mom, you know, obviously was our primary educator, and she's got this, you know, this rich admiration for and appreciation of ancient literature and music, and just, you know, she's kind of a Renaissance lady. So that was my upbringing, like listening to classical music and reading, you know, like British literature. And I arrived at college, film school of all places, which is ironic because we didn't even have a TV. But I just had this, you know, this immense desire to make and to create media and story. And so went to film school, which is where I ran into Tim. And it's funny because like neither of us make movies, you know, but it was still like a great decision on both of our parts, because we both met our wives there and we both, you know, found out that we've got a pretty cool collaboration here.
And I imagine film isn't strictly like, here's how to use the camera and where you point it and what lighting looks like, but there's an aspect of it that's telling a story, which is kind of key to marketing as well.
Yeah, and that's a great segue. Because, you know, when Tim and I met, I was trying to be a screenwriter director, and he was trying to be a director producer. So it was kind of a cool, you know, hand in glove partnership that we formed. And he kind of, you know, I would say locked down on his lane as a producer, and I did as well as a writer director. So we worked on multiple projects together throughout film school, and making movies is super fun, you know, and doing like the 48-hour challenges and the rush, the adrenaline, getting on set, you know, problem solving, figuring stuff out on the fly. And we enjoyed the crap out of that. But I think what we enjoyed even more, and Tim, you know, feel free to jump in, disagree if you do. But what I think we enjoyed even more was creating marketing plans for our movies. Because when you call cut or when you lock the edit, that's not the end of the project. Like, you've got to put together a press kit and prep for festival circuits and, you know, put together posters and media packages and social media strategies and all that stuff. In many of our projects, we also had to fundraise. So there was a marketing campaign that was occurring on the front end as well as the back end. And we were really good at that. And it was almost like get to the finish line, call cut, you know, wrap the film so that we can get to the fun stuff. I guess here's where you could, like, you know, jump in and tell support the eight story if you want.
Sure. Well, I mean, we've got a lot of stories throughout college that we started discovering our passion for marketing and really our love for, like, being able to turn stuff around quickly, efficiently. And I think that's kind of like, there's that thread throughout a lot of our story is like a constant pursuit of trying different things, trying new things, taking what other people have done and trying to make it, you know, better or evolve it. And so, you know, a fun story that kind of comes to mind, like one of our early collaborations was, I think it was our junior year of college. Our university decided not to renew the contracts for 8 professors, out of which we only knew a few of them, but they were like our favorite professors. And it was a heavy blow to a lot of the student body. There wasn't a lot of like transparency as far as like why, but everybody, like, there was a lot of students that were kind of rallying together, like, what is going on? Like, we loved these professors and why are they leaving? And so I think us being slightly naive and thinking like, yeah, we can totally flip the system and try to get these professors to stay somehow, you know, we were like, and this news broke, I think it was like 6 p.m. or 5 p.m. on like a Tuesday or something, towards the end of the school year, really. And I think that evening, like, a couple of us got together. I mean, mainly like our core group of people who usually comprised of Joe and I and Lauren, who's my wife, and Ashley, who's Joe's wife, and a few other friends. We got together and we were like, okay, what can we do to try to sway the school to like reverse their decision? And I'll say right now, the story doesn't have a happy ending. So let's just keep going with that. The school did not reverse. But I think what we discovered about it was like, wow, we're really good at this and mobilizing. So we used a lot of like my producing background, which was like the project management side, which was coming together and like organizing our efforts. What are we going to try to do? What are we going to put together in order to execute this? And Joe, along with Lauren and Ashley, had a lot of ideas creatively as far as like, what are we going to try to put online or et cetera. So the game plan essentially was we were going to shoot a video with a bunch of students telling their stories about why they love their professor. Joe designed a logo.
Well, so let me jump in real quick. The interesting thing about a lot of film students, at least, you know, the community that we found ourselves in back in college, is that when you're trying to make a film, you don't have a team. It's just you in your parents' basement, like doing your own thing, and you become a multi-tool. So you're the kid who knows After Effects and Premiere and WordPress and Illustrator and Photoshop. Like, you have a working cursory understanding of all those softwares and platforms and, you know, kind of methodologies. So we put together a guerrilla scheme for how we were going to make an impact. And that included, yeah, we created a logo. I put mm-hmm. together these posters. It was just a black wash with a giant white 8 and a QR code. QR code technology was relatively new at the time too, which dates us.
Yeah,
it was kind of like this mysterious, like, what is that kind of thing? We created a video. We recorded interviews of like a whole bunch of students telling stories about their memories with these professors. And we put the video on the website. We yes. had contact forms.
Yeah. So in the midst of Joe and the others shooting this video, I'm in my dorm putting together a website. We bought the domain supportthe8.org. And we're like putting together I'm throwing together this website as fast as I can, like this old WordPress site. And yeah, like Joe said, we've got this contact form that we created. We had this idea of like, what if students could write a note to their professor? Like it would be a dropdown. We essentially routed the emails to each professor in the dropdown. we made it very transparent that the president of the school was going to be CC'd on the email that you send to your professor. So we were essentially having all of these students write all these notes of support to their professors, like, I'm going to miss you, and this is the impact you had on my life. And while all this is happening, like, the president of our school's inbox is getting flooded with all of these emails at the same time.
It's very cheeky. And the crazy part about the story is that we did it all overnight. Like, it was all in 12 hours.
Yeah.
And we got in trouble. And like Tim said, there wasn't a happy ending. But what we learned as a result of that experience, and I mean, it was a small school, but like that press kit, the video and the website and those emails and all that went viral overnight.
Yeah, alumni were sharing it
throughout our community and the school. But yeah, I think what we realized is just how like awesome that adrenaline rush was and how we wanted to keep feeling it. Like Tim said, it's kind of an origin story, and it goes to show, you know, how we essentially discovered this instinct for guerrilla marketing, even while we were trying to become studio filmmakers. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how we met and how we discovered our love for marketing. And it's not so much marketing per se as it is content creation.
Yeah,
we build ships. Is the metaphor that we use. We're not as keen on sailing ships, but we love building ships and, you know, making sure that they're ready for their voyage. So after
real quick, before we get too far away from that story, what does "we got in trouble" mean?
Oh gosh. Well, there was a couple things that we didn't do so great. I mean, keep in mind that we were, you know, we're students at the time. We had no money. We didn't have really any equipment. So there was a moment where Joe and I were working for the school, for the marketing department. So we may or may not have used marketing equipment to make this video.
Yeah.
And I think the school, like rightfully so, I understand their position on it was like, this was a decision made, thought through. It wasn't like it was just spur of the moment. And again, we really, to this day, don't really understand why it was done, but yeah, so they
right or wrong, we did kind of paint the school administration as villains.
Yeah,
sure, sure.
Because it served the narrative, you know, and it
right.
It was effective.
Yeah, and we were angry too.
But it was immature.
Yeah.
So, like Tim said, I mean, there were a few things that I'm proud of that we did, a few things that weren't super mature. So
yeah,
right, right. Well, I mean, anytime you have a villain, marketing becomes a little bit easier.
Yeah.
And particularly, I think that's a good thing, and it could be a good tool to take care of really bad things that are happening in our world. And then there's a way that I think marketing can be used to villainize very good things that are happening in the world. And so as marketers, I think it's our responsibility to learn from those experiences, like the one you're talking about, and ask ourselves a question. Or is there's ethical or moral implications or questions to be asked as a campaign's generated? Yeah. Are you villainizing something that isn't really a villain, or do you really believe that it's a villain? You know, all those types of things. So I think there's a lot of lessons packed into that.
Yeah.
That story that you shared, and even your lessons that you're sharing, you learned to be able to look back on it with fondness, but also be like, yeah, there's some immaturity involved. What a cool experience to have.
Yeah. I think too, like when I look back at the experience, a lot of it was influenced at the time by the Invisible Children campaign, the whole Joseph Kony.
Yep.
Remember that Kony, was it Kony 2012 or something that came out? I mean,
yeah,
that's a campaign that is rarely dissected, but if you look at it, it was like an insanely viral campaign that like exploded overnight. And this is like, yeah, I think when we looked at that, there was a lot of similarities in what we did. And kind of when you dissect that and you learn about some of that story that that crew went through after the video went out, like there was a ton of criticism that came out against them from people who were like, no, you're actually doing more damage than you're doing good. And there was people out there like, no, I'm getting my posters. I'm going to go out and paint the city. And I think for us, like there was a lot of similarities, obviously in a much smaller scale, but when we, yeah, like Joe said, we did all that over, you know, the course of like 12 hours. And I remember it was 6 a.m. We had finished, we pulled an all-nighter. We finished editing the video. We hit publish on YouTube. We went to our next class, which I think was like an 8 a.m. class, and we slept through the whole class. And at that time, the video had already gone live. And I just remember leaving the classroom and taking like a long nap and not waking up until 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, then checking YouTube and seeing that we already had like 2,000 views. And it was like, oh my gosh, you know, which is not a whole lot, but at the time, like we're just some small school, and we started seeing that like on Facebook, a ton of alumni were sharing it.
Yeah.
And I think similar to like what those, what that team went through, the Invisible Children team went through, was like having the courage to just kind of stand with their message and what they did. And I think they probably feel the same way like that we do about some of the convictions they have later. I mean, I can't speak for them, but I know like for us, we felt like looking back, there was some of that, like Joe said, some of that immaturity. We're like, oh, that wasn't a great idea. Like, for example, we totally plastered the president's office with a bunch of Support the Eight posters. Probably not a great idea, but there was just a ton of passion and fire behind us to like get these professors to stay and to get this message out.
Right.
But, you know, kind of diving deeper into the getting in trouble story, there was that moment that like, I think it was like 6 p.m. we were going out for dinner. We were very like feeling very successful. And the campaign had been up for like a full 12 hours at that point. And then all of a sudden we started getting like calls from the university, like, please answer our calls. We need to speak with you. It was just like, oh gosh, like this sinking feeling of like, have we done something wrong?
Yeah. Know? Like, did you call my parents?
Yeah.
You know, it's
Yeah. Like, so can I ask a question real quick before we get into that, Joe? How did they find out it was you? So I imagine with a lot of these things and knowing that it's tech, there's, you know, I would think there would be a little bit of mystery around who the organizers are to make it feel more guerrilla, or was it just like,
it was pretty,
it's
obvious.
Tim and Joe, like we just did, or, you know, and the other people involved, they're like the team on the website, like we're the people behind this, or, you know, what did that look like?
You want to tell that part?
Yeah. I mean, so, like, for instance, the video had voiceover, right? Like, we created like some cool After Effects motion graphics, and we're like telling the story to create context.
Yep.
And I mean, like, I read one of the voiceovers, my then girlfriend, now wife, read one of the voiceovers. So, and I mean, it was a small enough institution to where like people understood it was that group.
Totally. You know? Totally. That makes sense.
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of
it connects the dots. Yeah.
Mystery. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Deal. Okay, Joe, I interrupted you. You were about to go into something. Do you remember what it was?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, it's interesting. Like, I'm thinking of the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, which, super basic stuff. It's not like revelatory by any stretch, but like it's a great reminder of just how to be a good person as a professional. And one of the key messages in that book is everyone wants to feel important. You could argue it's the most fundamental desire in the human race. And I think in some ways where that leads is this desire to crusade, to have a cause and to fight for it and to triumph and to make change, because signing your name to significant change, you know, makes you important. And I do think that's, you know, one of the, I guess, philosophical pieces of why we love doing what we do. And I mean, Tim said we went to that next 8 a.m. class and slept through it. But what he left out is the professor of that class had just been let go. She was one of the eight.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this tremendous loyalty and, you know, a sense of accomplishment I mean, it was straight up adrenaline, you know, like when you stand up for someone who you perceive as being in a vulnerable place or attacked for unjust reason, it's energizing. And like you said, Evan, I mean, it makes marketing so much easier when you can paint black and white. Mm-hmm. The world in reality is gray most of the time. But if you can kind of polarize, jack the contrast a little bit and paint like the victim, the villain, you know, the person who didn't do anything and is still being unjustly treated, like it creates this swell in your community. And it makes you feel like you're part of something, of a movement, and you're signing your name to that change. You're feeling important. And I think that's at its core, one of the reasons why guerrilla marketing is so effective and also so fun to do.
Yeah.
But anyways, that was the point I was going to make. We can move on to kind of, you know, where kind of learning that about ourselves, that we love marketing, collaborating, creating content, building ships, where that's kind of led us to date. Because that was, I mean, gosh, that was 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Deal. Before you do that, you said one thing. The marketing is really easy when the world's black and white, but in reality, the world's gray. I would add, or yes and, or edit that statement to say we marketing's easy when the world's black and white, but in reality the world is very colorful. It is full of color. Black and white or gray is a shade of black and white.
Yeah.
And color brings life and brings nuance to reality in ways that are so complex. And I think if somebody can harness the power of that color and really expose the complex reality, then marketing also becomes very easy too. So bringing life, showing life, beautiful life in the color, which you guys in your marketing have done really well too. You like to play with
color.
Joe, you've got a colorful shirt on today. So so anyways, I just thought of that whenever you said it. It's like,
yeah,
our world is so color. It's not a bleak place. What's the book? It reminds me, like, seeing the world in color reminds me of this book called The Giver. And in the book, everybody kind of sees things in black and white. And then whenever they come into contact with reality or with color, it's a really beautiful thing. It actually, that was the last book I read before I met my wife. And then I started having feelings for her, wanting to take her out on a date. And in the book, Living Life of Color is putting yourself out there and being okay with getting hurt. Like, that's where the color comes from. It's from the pain and from the suffering. It actually brings about life. But protecting ourselves from those things is actually more of a death than experiencing pain and experiencing suffering. So it's what gave me the courage to actually ask her out on a date and not just sit back and be like, oh yeah, I don't want to get hurt or I don't want to get rejected, so I'll just let that one go by. But
Living in the arena.
Say that again.
Living life in the arena. That's Roosevelt or Brene Brown reference.
Yes. Love it. Okay. So let's go from this college guerrilla marketing, falling in love with marketing through film, storytelling, being for something, even as much as you're against something. How does that lead you to doing marketing work together now? Mm-hmm. And what does that look like?
Go ahead.
Yeah, so after college, Joe and I kept in contact. I mean, our group was pretty close. Joe married Ashley, and then Lauren and I got married shortly after college, and we stayed in contact for a long time. And at the time, we were trying to get some feature films off the ground. We weren't really sure what we wanted to do next. There was a lot of post-graduation blues, like, what are we doing? What's the future look like? And kind of fast forwarding through the timeline, because it's a long one. We worked at separate jobs, and then we were able to reunite at a job together where we essentially started an internal agency, if you will.
I feel like there needs to be some sound effect whenever you say reunite too.
Reunited. No, yeah. So we did reunite, and it was awesome. I mean, we were super excited to be able to work together again. And that kind of brought about a ton of opportunity for us to continue honing our skills as technical experts, as creatives. And then, yeah, so fast forwarding even further to really the last year, I would say, you know, pandemic hits.
Well, let me jump in real quick, because sure. I do want to say that, you know, ever since college and even in college, we were creating LLCs.
Sure.
You know, like Tim and I and Lauren and Ashley and our small group, like we were always trying to build something that was future proof.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when you're 19 years old, it's hard to do. And
unless you're buying Ethereum.
Yeah, it's true. Right.
But, you know, we had business cards printed and we had, you know, LLCs registered, and things would just fall through because we were children. And, you know, I think throughout the years, there was this recurring conversation that would occur. Like, we wanted to start an agency. We wanted to make a film, whatever the dream was. But we always knew that we wanted to reunite and
yes,
make something happen that, you know, we could work on, and it would be like our source of income, and it would be like our future occupation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think when you're in college, when you're a young person and you've got the raw materials, if you will, to kind of build something like an agency, there's just this vacancy in your toolkit, and you can't really fill that except with experience. So over the years, we kept adding tools and we kept realizing how little we knew and how much there was yet to learn and so on. And I would say maybe 2 years ago, we kind of hit that tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
And we realized we've got all the tools. We know everything we need to know for MVP, minimum viable product, to get this thing started. Sure, there's always going to be more to learn, but we could start this. And I think we lacked nothing but courage for the longest time, because, I mean, there's uncertainty wrapped into, you know, jumping off a cliff and starting something new.
Yeah.
And for that, I would thank a global pandemic that probably shook up a lot of businesses and started a lot of businesses, and I mean, caused who knows what. The future will tell, but it definitely caused us to soul search and question whether we were spending our days the way we wanted to.
Hmm.
So yeah, in March, April, we flipped the switch. Mm-hmm. And we went full time.
2021. You're talking just a few months ago.
This is like yesterday, it feels like.
Yeah, now it's, yeah. And I think, like, there's so much that led to that point. I think, to expand on Joe's story, like, there have been a lot of failures in the past, but not really necessarily failures, just like a ton of learning experiences, if you will, as corny as that sounds. That is the truth. Because there's a lot of times where you're like, this just isn't working and I don't know what else to do. And then you start kind of questioning. At least for me, I'm, you know, I start having existential crises, and I'm just like, what are we supposed to be doing? Are we heading in the right direction? And really, like Joe said, the pandemic, and I think this goes for a lot of people that we've at least encountered and spoken to, is it caused a lot of people to pause, obviously, during quarantine. And there was a lot of soul searching and perspective. And yeah, I think we were just like, you know what, it's time to do this. And there were a lot of other factors that played into it. I mean, for example, we had like an awesome support group, just to give a shout out to John and Jamie Howard, which you've had Jamie on this podcast before.
Yeah.
Those brothers are, I mean, they're some solid guys, and they've done an awesome job of really just like building us up, encouraging us. And John, for me at least, has been like a huge source of encouragement and perspective and really just guidance. He's kind of like a big brother to us in this capacity. So, you know, and there was a lot of other people that kind of factored into that, who were just like, you could absolutely do this. And it's funny, because there's a ton of people out there who are always going to say, like, I have no doubts. Like, if you go out on your own, you're totally going to be able to do it. And you're like, it's easy for everybody else to say, but like, yeah, there's this courage aspect of like, are we ready to jump? And basically, like, if we're burned out, then we don't eat, because if we're not working, money's not being generated. And it's like,
right.
There's a ton of thought that goes into it. And you just kind of have to make the jump at some point without, you know, trying to completely overthink it constantly. So yeah, in April, we finally started Maniac.
If we're kind of taking a quick pause to address those listening who may be in a position where they're like, I guess maybe considering a similar leap, I would say, and Tim always has said this too, but like money does, it comes and it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the, you know, if you're a hard worker, like it's going to come, but then at some point it's probably going to go too. It's just life. There's a cycle. And in light of that, I think you've got to make big decisions like this with legacy in mind, you know, more than finance. And I understand like you've got children at home, or like you've got, you know, additional considerations that kind of weigh in your mind. But at the end of the day, like you're going to write a story that someone's going to read, and you want that story to be full of courage, not scarcity. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage anyone considering a similar lead, you got this, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you listened to Hold the Standard podcast?
Mm-mm.
Okay. I would recommend it to both of you. It's very along the lines of what you are talking about. And it's really encouraging to me. I'm at a similar place. Uplink Marketing is longer than, it has been around for about 6 years, but January is whenever we really started to grow and started taking on employees, and it wasn't just me anymore. So yeah. I feel like I've just restarted everything in January. So what you're saying is encouraging to me. And so I appreciate you sharing that, even if I'm the only one that listens to you tell this right now. Thank you. It really is encouraging. Also, I'd recommend Hold the Standard podcast. It's awesome. The guy wrote a book called Going Right. And then there's a subline to it. It has nothing to do with politics. It's just about following what your passion is and doing that and living that. And he based everything off of, not everything, that's probably a dramatic statement. One of the quotes that he based all of his work off of was from Jim Carrey. And it is, I grew up watching my dad fail at things that he hated doing. Yeah. Why not try something that I love doing and fail at that? And it's quite a picture to paint. And so if you're doing something that you hate doing every day and you could also fail doing that, it makes the courageous leap a little bit easier to go and know that you could also be doing something that you love and failing at that. And they're very different perspectives to have. And that's been helpful to me this year too. You guys actually, so there are very few people I think that I'll remember whenever I'm like in my old age. And I think Joe and Tim, you guys have made the list.
That deserves a sound effect too. I don't know what I'm thinking, like rap horn or something.
Yeah, because I interrupted you at lunch to leave lunch and go welcome. Like my wife was in labor while I was at lunch with you.
I remember that. Yeah, so
that story will get told in our family. It's already been told. Like, yeah, Evan was at lunch. And so I called him or I texted him, you know, I remember looking at my phone and I remember interrupting, I don't know which one of you was talking. I remember interrupting you and saying like, hey, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I've got to go, you know, whatever. I don't know if this is really it, but it ended up being it. Anyways, I don't know how I just got to that. I think I just wanted to share that today.
That's so cool.
Very, yeah, that is awesome.
Very few stories I think will be remembered late in life. But that one will be remembered.
Was it a boy or girl?
It was a boy. Yes. His name is Boone. He was born March 31st, which was the day we were at lunch.
Yeah.
So right before April, in the midst, you guys were kind of sharing all about Maniac and we were making connection, building relationship. And I was like, peace out, guys. which he's also, so he made the cut. Our daughter was born in March 2020 and our son was born in March 2021. So they're almost Irish twins, two weeks apart. But anyways, maybe I just wanted to squeeze that in the podcast there. I don't remember how I made that connection, but I did.
Love it.
That's awesome.
Doing what you love. So what are you guys doing now? So you mentioned, you know, like making the leap, doing something you love. I know it's Maniac. I've said Maniac. So what is Maniac Agency or Unagency? What is this whole deal that you're doing?
So I'm going to take a one final hop back into the past in order to set this up. So I've, like I already alluded to, I've, you know, kind of come from this creative background. I was kind of brought up on Renaissance literature and art and music. And I went to art school as a homeschooler, did like correspondence art training. And I love design. I would define design as opposed to art as functional, strategic. So they're very much similar in that you're creating something that's appealing and engaging to look at or experience as a user. But design has conversion in mind. So you're trying to get something out of that interaction. Tim, if I'm, you know, doodling in the basement, Tim is building websites or hacking his school server.
Yeah, that's another story for another time.
Tim was the tech kid who was always on his computer learning code and building websites.
And understanding what a blockchain means.
Yeah. Inventing the blockchain.
Yes.
You know, so while, you know, in terms of like soft skills, I think we collaborate well because I'm much more philosophical and Tim's much more brass tacks, project management, you know, activating people towards a cause. And in terms of hard skills, we collaborate well as well because I'm, you know, creating content and Tim's distributing it or setting up systems to automate UX. So to answer your question, Evan, what we do is we create marketing content, whether that's photography, video, websites, brands, copywriting, marketing automations. We build ships. And the reason that we're kind of dubbing what we do as the unagency is that we've both got experience on each end of the agency model, going back several years, working for internal agencies, traditional agencies, and even being the client on the phone call trying to decide on an agency. So we've kind of seen the good, the bad, and the ugly, if you will. And what we've learned is what we want to characterize our agency, what we want to do, what we don't want to do. And we arrived at this model that's, I would say it's pretty different. It's pretty fresh. And we wanted to communicate that in the way that we branded ourselves. One of our favorite campaigns is T-Mobile's Uncarrier campaign, which we just thought was so smart because it was so effective in kind of setting them apart from other carriers. At the end of the day, T-Mobile's a carrier, but they called themselves the Uncarrier because they wanted to communicate the difference. And essentially, I would say the three pillars, and you can jump in here too, Tim, but the three pillars that we've kind of developed to tell that story are, we say we're unjumbled, we're unapathetic, and we're unstoppable. And that un prefix kind of, you know, carries through into unagency. You want to break those down a little?
Yeah. So the unjumbled focuses on our process. So we've been, like Joe said, we've been on all sides of the agency spectrum, whether it's hiring an agency, working for internal or external, going to conferences and seeing how other people are doing it. And there's a huge gap for solid process in a lot of agencies. And it's a difficult thing because most agencies are, at least, you know, aside from maybe web, a lot of them are creative. And I think from my perspective, like a lot of creatives, you know, not to completely generalize, but a lot of them that more struggle with the organization side of things and more sticking with the creation side of things. And I think kind of the value that I bring to the table for Maniac is the ability to form process and repeatable process. And what does that look like for our clients? And a lot of the times we've worked with some clients who are like, we work with agencies that didn't deliver a product because they didn't have a process. And so the project failed, or it's been a 3-year website build or a 2-year website build, whatever. And so when we started this business together, we said, we want to set ourselves apart with process. And what does that look like? And so we've been creating essentially like our project management process. We've been creating written documentation and just kind of rolling that out to clients, trying different things and thinking outside of the box on that capacity. And then the second point is just being unapathetic. And I think this kind of goes, this really ties into the maniac side of things, which is just like we pursue passion. We both have been wanting to get to a place where we can be picky with clients. Like we want to work with people who are passionate, not just somebody who's got a budget and needs to get a website done or needs to get a brand redone. We want to work with people who are just as passionate about marketing as we are, and they see the value. And so we've made it really kind of like this thing for us where we want to pursue clients that want to pursue us as well. And then really the last point is just the unstoppable aspect, which is just this, you know, I've heard this saying many times, but stop selling and start helping. And so that kind of tied into what we're doing too. Like we've worked for different places that required us to, you know, build out projects that were just sold for the sake of making a dollar. And while there's a ton of, you know, argument to that where people have to make ends meet and they've got to meet a quota, I completely understand that. I just know for us and our model, like we're trying to get away from just selling for the sake of selling. And we've had a lot of conversations with clients where we're like, you think you need this, but we don't necessarily think that you should pursue this. And it's been hard to turn money and projects away. But that's basically, that's kind of led us to this stop selling and start helping people and helping them find what they need to do, helping them spend their smartest dollar, if you will.
Yeah. So all of those things seem very structured, organized, you know, process, unapathetic. The term maniac seems so chaotic to me. So how do those tie together? Do those get tied together? Is maniac just kind of this fun, energetic, like it has a fun energy to it? Anyways, I like the name maniac, but does that tie in anyway with the unagency or with these values that you have? Or is there a fun story from college where you're like, oh yeah, this is where the name came from?
Sure. Do you want to pause for a second though? And
let him out.
We've got a dog here that needs to go out.
He just woke up and he's all feisty.
Yes, go for it.
Yeah, give me 1 second. Yeah, absolutely. Before we get into that, I did want to backtrack just a little bit and address one of the things Tim said. We're talking about, you know, the three P's, if you will, you know, being process-driven, passionate, and then proven, or unjumbled, unapathetic, and unstoppable. I think for me, you know, what Tim said about, you know, stop selling, start helping. I do like the fact that we, like you said, we have calls with clients which end with us ultimately determining we should not engage in a scope. You know, like it's smartest for you to do something else first, to make sure you hit first base before we start running at second. And I mean, that's super fulfilling for me. And I think for Tim too, because ultimately what we're trying to do, and if I were to boil unagency all the way down, what it means is taking everything that we've learned over the course of these years and leveraging it towards helping the client make a smart decision. Again, whether or not that involves engaging in a scope with us. So, to me, like that's kind of like the crystal. That's the unagency crystal.
Yeah, we've worked with a company. I have a friend at a company called Exceptional Leaders, and their mantra, which we adopted at Uplink, is inwardly sound and others focused. And everything that you're talking about there is others focused. It's not for the good of maniac, or it's not for the good of you, it's for the good of the client, and you're always putting that before you put yourself. So the best leaders, exceptional leaders, says the best leaders are inwardly sound and others focused, and everything that you've just been talking about there is the others focused portion of that, and that goes a really long way. There's a reason they use that as their kind of foundation for all of their teaching. There's a reason we've adopted it as our mantra as well, because it builds relationships when you do that. If you're looking to grow a business and not just make a quick buck, that's probably a good guide for decision making.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to legacy. Like what kind of business are you trying to build? You know,
mm-hmm.
Do you want it to still be around in 20 years? Like you got to do business the right way and treat people the way you'd want to be treated.
Yeah, sure. It's a way to build trust too, you know, when you're not trying to just sell something for the sake of selling it.
Right, right. It's actually a really good sales tactic as well. So even sure. Not selling is one of the ways to close a deal.
Like Patagonia, don't buy this jacket, right?
Yes, yes, exactly. There's something that draws you to people who are looking out for your own good, who are looking out for you, not just themselves. So it's great. All right, so Maniac. Is it time to jump to Maniac? What is Maniac?
Let's do it. I mean, yeah, if we want to draw one final line back to college, kind of, you know, that guerrilla mindset, being like this renegade, you know, barbarian. Because here's the thing, like neither of us has ever had a single course in marketing. You know, like we're not trained, we're completely self-taught. And I think for those who are self-taught in their discipline, you learn shortcuts. You know, you kind of turn your nose up at certain processes that are just kind of, I'm trying to think of a word, gratuitous, I guess.
Yeah, they've been there so long that nobody remembers why they're there. You kind of miss those.
It's not efficient.
Yeah.
So we just thought Maniac was appropriate because we've got like this renegade mentality, like just get the work done. You don't have to like color in the lines if that's not going to get the job done. Like just do what's smart for the customer and don't worry about form or, you know, best practice all the time. Like think outside the box.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then the second thing, which was just like that, I guess, obsession factor.
Yeah, I think Maniac is, to me, it's a high energy word, you know, like,
yep.
Kind of like our brand, which I think you should touch on. We tried to create that with our brand and our colors. And I think for us, like Maniac, at least for me, is kind of like this mode of obsession. Like if you're just somebody who wants to problem solve, you'll do what it takes to get it done. And I think there's that kind of a obsessive factor. Like when somebody is wanting to try to hire you for a project that you've never done before, you tend to be like, I believe I can do this. I'm going to say yes. And you know that because you've got this obsessive factor behind you, this problem solving mind where you're like, I'm going to read what I have to read and do what I have to do to get this done and get this done well. And also along the way, I'm going to learn what I have to learn as well.
What is there a definition for mania?
Crazy person?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Teach us. It'll fit. No. Extreme symptoms of wild behavior. Oh no, here you go. An obsessive enthusiast.
Yeah.
So I think Tim, that's what you were talking about there. An obsessive enthusiast being so, you know, like, yeah, everything you just said. So it's the second definition, but it's there. So you're obsessive marketing enthusiasts. I don't know if that will fit in anywhere, but that's great. I love it. And it does have a high energy to it. And the branding, Tim, you mentioned the branding. Joe, talk through us.
Yeah. So as a designer, you're always approaching brands strategically, brand development strategically. And the visual identity obviously it's a tip of that iceberg, right? But that's your business card. Like you want to make sure that you make an impact wherever you can. And in the past, you know, I've done coffee brands and I've done wine labels and those sorts of categories that designers really get excited about, because it's like, oh yeah, like I get to go to a coffee shop and take pictures and just breathe in the essence and all that nerdy stuff. And I think, you know, talking about like kind of reaching our tipping point and then finally just making the hard decision to commit to this new venture and diving off the cliff, there's this crazy kind of out of bounds style behind our visual brand. And it's kind of like Miami Vice meets like, I don't know, just like an 80s like disco room or something. And our logo type is like very geometric. It's not like super easy to read, but it's easy enough. It's edgy. Our color scheme is CMYK. It's just like the brand is very unapologetic, going back to the unwords. And I think that's what gets us very excited about it, is it's just like our brand doesn't give us the luxury of being hesitant. You know, our brand kicks the door open. So we've got to bring that energy too. And that's why I love it.
That's great. Have you heard of the band Surfaces?
Yes.
They have a song called Energy.
The answer is always going to be no.
I've heard of Surfaces.
They have a song called Energy, or maybe that's just the words I'm thinking of, and I'm not going to sing it. But their branding kind of aligns with you, and they have the song that's talking about energy, and it's one, if I'm looking to like amp myself up or change my mood positively, I put Surfaces on, and their energy feels very similar to the energy that you're creating with your brand. So listen to some Surfaces today. Look at all their album artwork. I mean, it's really cool stuff, bright colors. Anyways, I want to do something with that type of a brand. Uplink isn't that one. But I've got this other idea that I think would be really fun to lean into, that bright, energetic, lively, in your face type of a thing. So anyways, yeah. I love it. I personally love it, which I know isn't the purpose of
that's doing exactly that, but what I had in mind. Problem solved.
Cool. Okay. So we're ending every podcast. Thank you guys for sharing all of your story. We're ending every podcast with asking, why is marketing important? So this is the last question of your first podcast.
Yeah. We got to rewind and be like, I was just thinking when you were telling a story about your son, Boone, I was like, well, this is our first podcast, so we'll always remember this experience too.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. That's
awesome. You're on our list, man.
Love it. I hope it's a positive experience, and I hope there's many more to come from you guys. I think just hearing your processes and the way you think about marketing, there's a lot there. And then I would love to have you on the Uplink Marketing Podcast again at some point. I know we're going to do an Ethereum episode or blockchain episode. Yeah. And then Joe, we've got to find something that you've got a lot of energy around that has nothing to do with marketing and explore.
Story, that. Yeah. Easy.
Yeah. Story, is that what you said? deal. Okay, so I'm glad to have made it to your 80-year-old. Your memory is kind of you know, maybe not all that it used to be. This will still be on your list. Let's go from there. Last question of the episode: why is marketing important?
Should I give it a shot?
Yeah, go for it.
So I have to say this just because we were laughing about it yesterday, but when you sent over your questions and we were just like popcorning each other, like trying to figure out what our answers would be, Tim was like, why is marketing important? And I just said, I guess it's not really, you know, but I'm not going to say that because that's counterproductive.
No, you can say that. Just I actually love it.
And now we're signing off.
Yeah. So with that said, no, what I was going to say is so one of my favorite TV shows is Mad Men, which if anyone listening hasn't seen it, it's worth watching. But there's an episode, or there's a scene in an episode in which Don, who's the lead character, he's just this kind of misanthropic Madison Avenue creative director. But anyways, he's in this basement with a bunch of hippies smoking weed and just kind of like being Don. And it comes to the floor that he's in advertising. And of course they're like, it's just disgusting to them, right? And one guy takes like a long drag on his whatever and says like, man, like, how do you sleep at night? You're just perpetuating the lie. How do you sleep at night? And Don just says, on a bed made of money, which is like the cheekiest response. And like, you hate him for saying it, but it's so funny.
Yeah.
And the reason I tell the story is that like, I think there's a lot of truth in kind of the fact that in a lot of advertising, a lot of marketing, it's not honest. It's just for financial gain. And my response to the question, is marketing important, or why is marketing important? I mean, I think honest marketing is important, and integrity in marketing is important, because marketing is very potent. Like, it works for good or evil, which is why we got to make sure that we're telling truth, you know, about products and services. I think for the sake of the consumer, because we don't want them to be duped as consumers ourselves. Like, we don't like being duped. I mean, we know, like, I guess in recent years, you know, messaging like made in the USA or 0 grams trans fats, or like whatever it is, it's not always totally true. Like, it's not transparent. So for the sake of the consumer, like, you got to be honest. But what we were saying a second ago is true too. Like, for the sake of the vendor, for the sake of your client. If you want to build long-term success, you know, you've got to establish trust in your community. And how are you gonna do that if you're telling lies? So I think integrity in marketing is key.
Thank you guys so much for being on the podcast. If somebody were to want to get in contact with you or find out more information about Maniac, how would they do so?
Just go to our website, which is maniac.agency.
It was .unagency, not available.
Well, in about 10 minutes, I'm going to buy maniac.unagency, I guess you could say, or agency.
Oh, yeah. There you go. So, I'm going to get to it before you and I'll sell it to you.
Yeah, right. I'm working on it right now. Contact us on maniac.agency. And if you're old school, maniacagency.com works as well. Scroll to the bottom. There's a contact form. We ask you for your favorite restaurant because we are serious. If we ever do engage in a scope, we like to build relationships with our clients. So we'll take you out to dinner or to lunch.
Love it. Cool. Well, thanks again, you guys.
Thank you.
On the Uplink Marketing Podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Evan.
Thanks again for listening to the Uplink Marketing Podcast, and thanks to Joe and Tim for being on the show. Don't forget, we've got a free marketing assessment, uplinkmarketing.com/free. You don't have to give your email address, just click download and learn where to focus your marketing efforts.